Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hey there, fellow true crime aficionados. We're the host of Bad Acts, a true crime podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Aaron.
Join us every Thursday for twisted true crime tales of dark deeds and despicable people. We focus on lesser known unique stories with a new case each week. We've covered family annihilators, cannibals, revenge killings, killer kids, mysterious murders, survivor stories, and much more. We've even tackled stories of people who blamed zombies, vampires, ghosts, and voodoo for their bad acts.
Of course, we know they're the only ones to blame. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts, or you can visit our website at badactspod.com.
If you like fresh stories and new perspectives on crime, Bad Acts will be your new jam. Join Bad Acts every Thursday. Stay safe, y'all.
See you soon.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Identity Podcast on the Podmoth Media Network, your biweekly foray into the weird, wonky, and sometimes downright spooky.
So, this week I am joined by Matt Westmoland.
Nailed it.
I try to think of it like I want some mo.
Yeah.
So, Westmoland.
And that's where all the land was whenever this country was founded. In the West, there's a lot more land. So we're going to go that way with the Manifest Destiny.
Right. I'm joined by Matt this week. We've decided amongst our strange selves that we're going to discuss the very odd case of Mary and Carl Bach in Bowling Green, Ohio. So I kind of read through two or three different articles. You said you did the same thing, right? You did like two or three different ones.
I did, because I have a tendency to over-prepare for stuff.
Sure. And that's good. That's a good quality to have.
Especially for this job.
So yeah, I went through two or three articles and I was like, so this is the basic information of what happened. The basic information is Mary and Carl Bach were in a tumultuous relationship.
They
had been that way for some time. Eventually they decided that they were going to separate. It was really more so Mary saying like, this has to be done because this is too much. So she allowed him to live in the barn on the property. Which, you know, for the situation that she was in, I'm assuming that it was quite violent.
That's what I would guess. So yeah. There was one, they referred to him as a berserk farmer.
Yeah. Yeah. When anybody refers to you as a berserk farmer, I don't.
Yeah. That don't never know. Reads as peaceful.
Right. There's no peace there.
About to be some pieces.
there were some pieces. and we will get to those pieces. So anyway, she allowed him to live in the barn on the property. And then at some point, I'm not really sure how long they were separated and he was living in the barn, because it just says in October of that year, he had killed her with a corn knife. Now, I didn't know what a corn knife was.
I was hoping you would say that. Holy crap.
Yeah, I was like, oh, so like a corn knife. Okay, so like a little knife, you know, it's probably, you know, the blade's probably like a couple inches long, whatever. I looked at this thing. This thing is like 12 inches long.
What?
It's a machete.
That is not a knife.
No, it's not.
And you wouldn't use it for corn unless.
And it's Rambo. And it's not. It's not shaped like a machete. It's actually square on the top.
What? How does it cut? What?
So well, on the sides.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's like a machete, but it has no, you know, no curve to it.
Mm-hmm.
No curve to the blade. And yeah, he hacked her up with a corn knife. And I was like, okay, I had to Google it. I had to, because I had no frame of reference. I don't do anything with corn.
Right.
I don't know from corn knives. You know,
I eat it.
Right, yeah, I eat it. I mean, it's good with a bit of butter on it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I knew nothing from corn knives, and I saw that and I was like, whoa, because they were talking about all of the viscera that was present, you know, when law enforcement arrived.
Oh, yeah.
Like they were saying that it was like all over the place. Like she was just chopped up all over the place.
It was.
And when I thought about a corn knife before I Googled it, I thought that took a long time.
See, I just thought of a knife made out of corn.
Sure.
And, you know, you've seen those old, like, dried out, decorative, old multicolored corn things. Like, if someone cut followed it out and then used that as a handle and, like, the sheath that it goes in, like, corn knife.
You What's think that maybe for? He was, like, sitting in a corner somewhere whittling a cob of decorative corn?
He's whittling down a piece of corn like a shiv.
He was like, I don't know when it's going to be, but one day
it'll pop.
I'm going to kill my wife. And then like 4 years later in October, he's like, I finished my knife.
He's completely in the dark. Just the light of his cigarette
mm-hmm.
or tobacco pipe. I guess this is in the 1800s. Did they have cigarettes in the 1800s?
I believe that they did, but they weren't as murdery.
Right. This was like Civil War-ish era. So yeah. Very long after tobacco. Yeah, I'm certain that they did now that I say that, yeah.
Yeah, tobacco, but like not with all the other extra stuff. You know, like the road
with
tar.
DLC.
Yeah, there was no road tar in there or, you know, whatever. It was just tobacco that they were smoking.
Addiction Prime membership.
Right. Well, I believe that they also paid soldiers in cigarettes. I think that was a thing.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, but yeah, so anyway, he kills his wife with his corn knife. And the police arrive. And I guess the sheriff at this time, the only way that I could like explain that, like, if I'm thinking about the scene in my head, if I'm trying to like place this, right? So he walks into the barn and, you know, here is what's left of Mary Bach.
Yeah.
And then they arrest her husband. And so his idea is to pick up three of her fingers and put them in whiskey.
What? Why whiskey?
So, okay. So in my own little headcanon, I imagine that he was carrying the whiskey because it's like the 1800s, right? So he's like walking around. He's like walking around with just an open container.
Because I'm a man, goddammit.
And he's like, you know, I'm drinking my whiskey. Oh, look, I need these as evidence. I don't know. Like the visual on that must have been evidence enough.
The finger is evidence.
Oh, God. So, yeah, he doesn't take one finger. He doesn't take two fingers. He takes three fingers.
Because that's all that was left of this poor woman. Holy shit.
Probably.
I found a good quote that goes over exactly what he saw, if you want to know.
Oh, please.
Whatever Carl had going on in his little corn brain with his corn knife was... There's a lot of anger going on with this man. I don't know what happened to him. Maybe he got something happened to him in the cornfield. I don't know. But in the middle of the room, in a pool of blood, lay the body of a woman. The floor, walls, and ceiling were smeared and bespattered with blood. Giblets of flesh, tufts of hair, brains, and fingers were scattered all over the floor. The back part of the woman's head was all hacked to a jelly.
Oh.
The left shoulder had been nearly severed by one terrific blow. The side of the head was cut open nearly from the mouth back, and an arm was nearly cut off, and several fingers were severed on one hand. She was doubtless dead before the infuriated murderer ceased hacking her body. Holy crap, dude.
I hope to Christ she was dead before he was done. Holy
no
shit. Oh my god.
Also, never seen the word giblets in a murder investigation.
Well, this was the other reason why I thought maybe the sheriff was walking around with an open container.
Because you see shit like this every now and then.
Oh god.
Holy crap. Human if he giblets. Wasn't drinking beforehand, he definitely started that day.
Oh yeah, he became a full-on alcoholic after. Yeah.
I would go right back if I walked across that in the woods. I'm sorry. I tried. I can't do this.
Yeah, it's like him and whoever the sheriff was at, you know, in Black River Falls when all that crazy shit was happening. They just go to the bar and they're like, man, I gotta tell you some shit. And then he's like, you got nothing. Just wait.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I got another one.
Yeah, I found it really interesting that he didn't shoot his wife. Because that would have been the easier route.
That's way easier.
But he decided to go with corn knife.
Was it like 45 minutes to load the damn thing?
The corn knife?
Yeah, you gotta whittle it each time. It gets dull really fast.
Right. And that's not to, like, I just want to take a pause here. This is not to say that we are not making fun of this woman dying. We're not making fun of the ill, you know, circumstances. We're basically poking fun at the story itself.
This is it's so ridiculous. If you saw this in a movie, you would think that it was too much for the movie. This is how ridiculous this whole thing is. Like,
right.
Write it in a book or a English essay, and your teacher is going to, this is not realistic, really.
Right.
Like, you don't just see this all the time. So this is crazy to think about.
Yeah. I mean, there are a bunch of things that you can put in jars, dude. Like stewed apples.
Yeah. Those are delicious. You know,
bathtub gin.
Cucumbers.
You got a bunch of buttons, you know, that are kicking around, and you're like, fuck, just all over the place.
Various
put it in a jar. Leaves. It's very sensible.
Yeah.
And then you have severed fingers. And of course, when I read that he put it in whiskey, I was thinking of, like, you know,
I immediately thought of the worm and the tequila in Mexico.
I thought of that too, but I also thought about how many fingers you order.
Oh, ha, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, so he got 3 fingers of whiskey.
Oh, I bet every bartender in that town hates fucking people that do that.
I mean, they've got to.
I bet every fucking tourist that goes into town is like, give me 3 fingers of whiskey. And he's like, you're not being served here anymore.
Yeah, so the fingers are swept up, probably like you said, because those were the only things that were, like, really salvageable.
Yeah, you couldn't get much else off of that poor woman.
I mean, yeah, like, that's about it.
She even do? Like, was she just there? What? How did they end up getting that to that point anyway? Like, that's the ridiculous part. What the hell happened from A to B?
Yeah, you know, every piece that I read on it basically said that they had a rough relationship basically from go. He had anger issues. You know, she was constantly, you know, living in fear of him. And eventually, you know, they got to the 15-year mark and she was like, you know what? I've been dealing with this bullshit for 15 years. I can't do it another day. And pulled the plug.
He can't deal with it.
So
sounds like he was the one dealing it.
He was definitely the one who had more serious problems than she did. Although
he
had serious problems in the end too, but so he scoops up these fingers, he brings them back to the station house, the police station, with him, and the fingers are preserved, and then they're on display, which I think is kind of strange. I don't really know what the purpose of, first off, I don't really know what the purpose of taking the fingers in the first place was.
It seems like an odd thing to collect.
Well, yeah. I mean, what is he going to do? He's not going to get, he doesn't need DNA. It's not like he could get DNA anyway, because it's 1881.
I don't know about that for another 120 years.
Right. So, I mean, that's not happened. Whoever is going to be dealing with this case and like giving testimony on what exactly happened was there and saw it. So I don't really understand the purpose of scooping up the fingers and putting them in whiskey. That just seems odd. And maybe that's another part of the story that doesn't necessarily hold any weight. You know, like maybe it wasn't whiskey. Maybe it was, you know, just like some sort of alcohol, just random fucking, like, I don't know. I mean, you never know, you know, but it seems like an odd thing for him to do, to just kind of like scoop them up and be like, okay, gonna take these with me.
Because what is he gonna do with them? There's no like forensic shit back then.
Right. And he doesn't need the forensic shit anyway.
Because you know, there, who else could it have been, bro? Like,
right. You were there. You walked in on the scene. You know who killed her. You know what happened.
You know what? I earned a bonus. I'm taking these. These are mine now. I know what I'm going to do with them, but I'm going to bring them with me. But you know what? I don't want them to get dried out. What, hold on. I have a flask. What the fuck, man?
It makes no sense. It makes no sense to me. Yeah, so I guess they
Wait,
were...
hold on. I have... Where did this happen?
Bowling Green, Ohio.
Real quick on that. So, when I first read this, I thought... My first thought was, there's a fucking Bowling Green in Ohio, too?
Mm.
Why are there two Bowling Greens? Because there's another one in Kentucky. There's actually 15 in the United States. Florida, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Maryland, New York, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Virginia, and 3 each in Missouri and Ohio. They're all in different counties with different populations, so I count that.
Huh. Wow.
Why?
I mean, somebody was like, hey, this is a nice name.
That's exactly what happened. So I made a joke with my friend at work the other day. I bet it's just some dude from Bowling Green, Kentucky, who moved to Ohio and then was like, you know what? I like the sound of that old place I came from. And then I'm just going to name it after that. And then that is exactly what happened. It was a retired postal worker who used to deliver mail to Bowling Green, Kentucky all the time.
Sure. That makes sense.
We have no originality when it comes to naming stuff in this country. It's crazy.
So yeah, he takes the fingers. He, you know, takes him to the police station. They go on display. Eventually they go from... and for some reason, I'm blanking on where they were originally. I don't see that anywhere.
I don't either.
I don't understand.
Where are the damn fingers? There's only 3 of them. Can't be that hard to keep track of.
Originally, they were housed in, I think it was maybe City Hall. And then at some point, they were transferred to a museum. Oh, wait, this says... Oh, yeah, yeah. So they were moved to a museum. And then in 2014, the Wood County History Center and Museum decided to remove the fingers from view to figure out what was going to happen with them. Because, you know, for obvious reasons, right? I mean, they're concerned about the exploitation of body parts and... the sensationalism and, you know, that surrounded all of this and whatever. Yeah. So it makes sense. So yeah, they're, you know, transferred off viewing. And then somebody actually, so a historian wrote, as a provocative artifact, the fingers bear witness to a tragic event, but can simultaneously remind us that domestic homicide is far from a thing of the past. writes historian Rebecca Mancuso. Former member of the Wood County Historical Society's Board of Trustees, Mancuso explores the decisions about the disposition of remains with which she hasn't been familiar since childhood. And then she says, my own siblings and I frequently begged our parents to walk us through to gaze at the fingers.
What?
I guess that's what they were known as, quote, the fingers. And like so many of our friends and neighbors, we spun frightful and highly inaccurate stories about them.
That's the part that makes me think about the maybe it not being actually whiskey.
I mean, I don't know.
What game the telephone has this story been through before it got written down? Like, I mean, I guess they had to have had an investigation, but. Like,
yeah, I don't know that whiskey has a high enough alcoholic content to do that.
Back then it might have because it wasn't refined, or maybe like not as much as it is today, but maybe.
Maybe that is true. I mean, you know, I know today when you preserve specimens, you need formaldehyde.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know, maybe in 1881, formaldehyde was, you know,
that's
whiskey.
What they called whiskey. It's just extra strength.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
They filtered it once instead of twice.
Yeah, I feel like I also read in another article that they were dried out and they had to rehydrate them.
They look like potato skins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why any of this?
I honestly don't. I mean, you know, I think that maybe it has something to do with the quote was just talking about the sensationalism of it all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who really goes to visit the courthouse or who really goes to visit this museum? And how many more people wanting to look at something strange and macabre are going to come to these places?
Do you think that was one person's decision to house them in the courthouse? Or do you think there was a meeting that went down? Like, how do we get more foot traffic in here to see what we're all about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really hope that that's not the case, that they were like, you know, this is a part of history and we want for this woman's story to be known. I kind of hope it was like that, but I don't think so.
Some kind of like long walk to get a drink of water thing for the preservation of like wholesomeness. Like, just,
yeah,
she didn't deserve what happened to her. So let's at least remember what happened to her.
Well, yeah, but then I mean, if they wanted to remember what happened to her, I feel like more appropriately it would, you know, it should have been
like a burial.
You know, this is her name, this is, you know, if they had children, this is how many children they had. You know, she died a violent death at the hands of her husband, and here, you know, here is this person who died. But instead it is all about, you know, like that section that you read about how gory it was and how violent it was and, you know, whatever. And I think that it just kind of takes her and removes her completely and turns her into this kind of just object that was destroyed.
It completely reduces her to just that paragraph I read and the three remaining fingers of her.
Right.
Just that's all people are going to remember. That's the lady who's just the, three fingers were in a museum, right? Like that's all it did to preserve her.
Right. Well, and then you know, he's convicted of murder and they send him to hang.
They find him guilty twice.
Well, they find him guilty twice?
I think so.
I mean, how do you get found guilty? Oh, because of his lawyer.
Yeah, that was the other thing I read, that in the papers after a while it became the Mary was the problem and that Carl was the pitiable victim of circumstance.
Yeah.
Like his lawyers went to bat for him so hard that they turned him into a martyr for something, I don't know. But they reversed it. They did a reverse Uno no you on him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like that was probably pretty common at the time too. Like
that's women. A damn good lawyer though.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, women back then really didn't have rights anyway.
I don't think they had any.
So it's just like, okay, you know, I'm the man in this relationship. Clearly it's her fault. And her, you know, his lawyer was like, okay, so this is the way we're going to play it. But yeah, he was convicted.
Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, from there, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about dark tourism.
Okay.
And kind of how, you know, we go to places like Gettysburg. You know, there have been reports at Gettysburg that the ground was soaked with blood. You know, it was a very violent, there was a violent aftermath at Gettysburg. A
lot of people.
A shit ton of people. And people go there. And it's a big tourist attraction. It's a huge tourist draw. You know, let's go to Gettysburg. Almost to the point where you can't go to that part of the country and not go to Gettysburg. Because that's on like every tourist travel itinerary. Let's go to Gettysburg.
I wonder, is that more because of the quote that it was soaked in blood or just because it was such a decisive battle?
Well, but see, this is the thing. So where do you draw the line between what is a dark tourism spot? So where many, many, many people lost their lives. And where is like the historical draw? Because you know that you're not only going to get the historical people.
Yeah, you're going to get the whole, both sides of it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's ghost tours and things too.
Oh, like, sure. I mean, people go to Auschwitz.
There's just this morbid fascination with, you know, the occult and the macabre for some people. And
yeah,
that's definitely, especially historical, like almost all ghosts are Victorian whenever they're drawn in like literature and things. Like, it's always the one that comes into my head all the time, like some Civil War era ghost or something. And yeah, it just helps play into the, like, I don't know. It's just this fascination with things like that. That's why this genre exists for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people, they go to visit the death camps. They go to Ground Zero. They go to Chernobyl.
I guess. No, they don't. They better not.
Oh, they do. They 100% to Chernobyl? Yeah, they do.
That is insane.
You can actually go and tour one of the reactors. And
how many waivers do you have to sign to do that?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question.
It's got to be a big number.
No, I remember because I was relatively young when that happened, but I do remember like news reports and stuff. I mean, that was just such a tragedy all around because they tried to cover it up. They thought that they could just be like, nothing to see here.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, dude, your nuclear reactor just blew its top, dude. Like you're shafted. You shafted a whole bunch of people.
Thing.
Is
that in Chernobyl, the elephant's foot?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they call the core, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, there were thousands of people that lost their lives in Chernobyl and, you know, thousands more who were affected by the radiation. And people still go and they put on like, I don't know what those suits are called, but you know, those white suits with like the hoods and stuff.
You know, like hazmat.
No, it's not hazmat. It's like something you get from like fucking, it's like Home Depot. No, it's like Home Depot SGA called. They want their fucking painting suit back. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's like the super beekeeper suit.
Yeah, and then give you like a little meter to tell you how much radiation you're being exposed to currently.
Geiger counter, I think it's called.
Yep. And they tell you, you know, if it goes above a certain point, you have to stop doing that. But I mean, there are people there are people that, you know, take others on tours into certain parts of Pripyat. And that they're not real safe areas. Like, you know, people go to Fukushima and they go on bus tours and they learn all about, you know, the nuclear power plant there that, you know, blew up and I think it was like, was it a tsunami? I want to say it was a tsunami.
I think so.
But you know, I mean, tragedy all around over there, and people are like, no, give me, you know, give me the Geiger counter, you know, give me the little painting suit. I want to go to fucking Fukushima. And it blows my mind. But this whole obsession with dark tourism, I mean, is it voyeuristic or is it educational? Like what is it? And then where is that line?
That's interesting. So I was thinking, like, going to one of those places, that's got to do something to your perspective, like to be able to try to step into the feet of the people that were there for that specific event is something that you really won't be able to wrap your head around if you've been obsessed with it for something. Like, if you just have to know, like, what was happening here at this time, like maybe you're a historian or a writer or something, and you just need right. that for a book, and you're not going to get that from just sitting in your closet staring at your posters all day, because this is where you can just be yourself in here. I'm not going to do that unless I go to that place. So there's the beauty of perspective and all this to consider too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I'm also thinking about in London, there was, I believe it was called Grenfell Tower. That building caught on fire, and a bunch of people died. And then afterward, a bunch of posters appeared, basically saying that Grenfell Tower is a tragedy and not a tourist attraction, because people were going and taking pictures.
Right.
You know, they were taking selfies. And you know, families are still looking for their missing loved ones in the rubble, and they're taking selfies. And I guess I don't understand, like, the line is so fine. Is it that this is new tragedy, so we can go to Gettysburg and we can take pictures of ourselves right in front of the battlegrounds at Gettysburg?
I think it has a lot to do with time.
Yeah.
Honestly. There's this thing, tragedy plus time equals comedy, which is where, you know, like a lot of comedians get their, I think
sure.
Patton Oswalt has an entire special called that, or some derivative of that. So I guess it just kind of depends on, this feels weird to say, the severity of it and how long ago it was.
Sure.
Not saying that it makes it any more okay, but there's a certain point where it's just kind of what it is.
Yeah.
In a way.
So then what is, I guess, how is going to a museum to see Three Fingers in a Jar educational? Like, does it only exist to raise awareness for domestic violence?
It's,
you know, like, what?
I hope not. I hope that's not their only thing.
I mean, does it serve as proof that human beings can be terrible, and this is a terrible thing that one human being did to another? Because, I mean, we already knew that.
Kind of knew that already.
We didn't need section in a museum dedicated to it.
Just one very odd and specific to this area instance. Like, that's so unnecessary.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, maybe that's it. You
but
know,
that,
like,
also makes it all the more impressive that it lasted for so long. 140 years later, we're still talking about it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that it still exists and people are still talking about it is impressive.
It is.
I do find that to be very impressive. But yeah, I mean, at the same time, you know, I just kind of go back and I'm like, okay, why though? Why?
Why any of this?
Yeah, I mean, why do we, you know, want to go to places like, you know, Auschwitz, and go and sit in a gas chamber? Why do we want to do that? And I think that part of it is we want to try to understand that human experience.
You're right.
Try
to connect with a piece of history.
Yeah, you know, and I think another part of it, a huge part of it is, you know, making sure that things like that don't happen again. You know, learn right. from history, or you're doomed repeat to repeat stuff. It kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know that this falls into any of those. Like, I don't find it educational. I find it historical, but it's like you said, it's very specific.
It happened in a historical era, but the tale itself is barely historical.
Yeah, I mean it's literally only historical to the people from Bowling Green, Ohio. That's literally it.
Who cares, honestly?
I mean, you know, I don't want to say who cares, because that's not.
Yeah, I don't want to sound disrespectful.
Yeah, like that's not like.
But like.
I mean, I don't really know that it's necessary, but I also don't know that it's not necessary. I don't know. I come down on kind of both sides of that line, because it's mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't get, like I said, not really historical, not really educational, unless you're trying to educate people about domestic violence.
But it seems like there'd be more effective ways to do that too.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I have never seen this display either. Like, I don't know if you go in there and you look at the three fingers in the jar and you're like, oh, here is the actual newspaper article about this. You know, here is like all of the, you know, medical information when they did the autopsy, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know if that's all laid out there, or if it's literally just like, here's the knife, here are the fingers, and here's this one fucking, I don't know what it was, like a JSTOR article.
Yeah.
About and this is news. What happened in 1881, you know.
Yeah,
because a lot of people can say, oh, you know, something like historically significant happened in my small town.
Yeah,
and it's not this. You know,
this is a weird example of that, I guess.
Yeah, super weird, super duper weird. So I don't know. I mean, I, like I said, I'm kind of flip-flopping on the line, because I don't know necessarily what purpose this serves or what it achieves. Where are you at?
I'm right there with you, honestly.
Hmm.
It's a tricky thing to say for sure, but it's definitely got the mark of a small town all over it. This is probably going to be... this was a big event then, so they didn't want to, it's going to persist throughout the ages for a certain amount of time. It's just impressive that it's lasted for 140 years.
Sure. I mean, this is almost kind of slipping into the realm of urban legend now.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah. Like, it still has enough facts. You know, it doesn't quite fit into urban legends yet, because it has enough facts maintained throughout the story that it doesn't really fall into that category just yet. But I feel like in a few years, if people just keep retelling, and like you said, aptly, the telephone game,
mm-hmm.
it's a real thing. And I think it's happening here. Like, I think that we're
it could be
looking at these stories and we're like, okay, so here's a story that says this, and now this story says that, and this has changed. And now this other story says this, and that's changed, you know? So, I mean, we're kind of, yeah, we're playing the telephone game here.
Also, that thing I read earlier could definitely have been written by a talented historian.
Oh, sure. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it honestly, I could have written that.
Yeah.
And I'm not a talented historian.
But the rest of it, I could probably work my way through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just don't know. I just don't know.
I don't know.
You know, we know that it happened,
sure.
Because we have human remains
and we got our fingers,
you know, and B, it's, you know, in a newspaper. somewhere. I couldn't find the newspaper, but it said that it's in a newspaper somewhere.
Yeah, if something like that's actually happened, people are going to talk about it. You're like, you're going to know something happened.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm kind of flip-flopping on it because I don't really see it as a historical thing that should be, like, preserved and whatever. That it seems like that's strange. That's an odd flex.
It really is a weird flex, bro.
right. Like, I'm from, you know, whatever, West Virginia, and this is, you know, my flex. And somebody else is like, I'm from Bowling Green, Ohio, and we have three fingers in a jar in a museum. Like, it just, I don't know. It's a weird flex, for sure.
We also have two other bowling greens.
Right. I live in this town where the name is not original at all, and we have three human fingers in, I don't even know what, it just says a jar.
Jar of whiskey.
I mean, at one point, I guess it was a jar of whiskey, but, you know, I mean, it looks like, if you look at it on display, it kind of looks like one of those older Gerber's baby food jars.
Ew.
Which, you know, talk about quality control.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Just had a thought. Right. I bet every bar in that town has a shot called the Mary, and it's just three fingers of whiskey on ice. And only guys with gelled hair order it.
You're right. Well, either that or only guys with Ed Hardy hats on backwards.
Yeah, them too. Oh, let me get four Marys, bro.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right now. Two in each hand, bro. Do it.
Yeah.
Those guys.
I don't know. You know, I think about I think about the legacy of people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to get a little deep here, so hold on. But, you know, I think about, for example, my grandparents, who passed away fairly recently. And I think about all of the things that they did in their lives and all of the people that they affected, and all of the good that they brought into the world. And I think, you know, how would I feel if my grandmother or my grandfather were reduced to three fingers in a jar in a museum, and for 140 odd years, this is literally all you've heard about them, was that there's three fingers left of them and it's in a jar. Like, that to me, I don't know. I wonder about, like, family that's left.
It feels a little bit disrespectful.
Oh, it's monumentally disrespectful. This whole episode has been disrespectful. guaranteed, it's been disrespectful. And, you know, apologies if I've offended anybody or Matt has offended anybody.
Of course, none meant to be given.
It's not. No, it's not intentional.
Laughter
it's
the only way
ridiculous.
I know how to process traumatic things in ridiculous manner. This is how I get through the day.
I mean, this whole thing is just, you know, I feel like I keep saying the same thing, but it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous in practice.
It does bear repeating a few times.
You know, like I feel like if we understand that this is our history, that at some point some sheriff took three fingers and put them in a jar, maybe this is history that doesn't bear repeating for sure.
Yeah, maybe not this specific one.
But I mean, I don't understand, like, the story as a whole. Like, it's just all over the place. I don't understand how, you know, we're not kind of using this as, like, an example of domestic violence. You know, we're not doing that. We're just saying that her husband was a bastard and killed her. And they
also
were having,
look what we got.
Yeah, and they were having marital problems, you know, and that's really all that we get. We don't really get any more than that. And then we get his side of the story that basically says she was a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just saying whatever, you know, like, because women, you know.
Yeah.
Because
women.
Right. And that's it. Like, that's the whole story.
Sorry, that caught me off guard there.
you know, I mean, they just basically like took three fingers in a jar and put them in a museum, and they were like, look at this tragedy.
This happened. And that's so, it's so odd. It is very odd.
Well, right. And you know, the people at Grenfell, the Grenfell Tower, one of the residents was talking to the BBC, and they basically said, like, this is not the Eiffel Tower. Like, you don't take a picture. So what you were saying about time and how, you know, we get a certain distance away from a tragedy and that, you know, then it's basically quote unquote okay. You know, he was like, yeah, this is not the Eiffel Tower, so people shouldn't be taking pictures. And it's like, well, I mean, technically, they really shouldn't be taking pictures for that reason at the Eiffel Tower either.
Yeah.
But they do, but that's somehow more acceptable because we have more time. So, I don't know. But I, you know, I think that the whole situation was just tragic in general.
It very much was.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully, if there are family members left over who, you know, were directly related to these people, both parties, you know, I mean, having to deal with that. I mean, that's tragic in itself.
Yeah, it would be very difficult to process something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about, like, being, you know, a great-great-grandniece or whatever, you know, of Mary, and you go into school on Monday and everybody's talking about, you know, Mary's fingers in a jar, and you're like, fuck, like, I'm related to that person. Like,
yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if she has any, like, still living descendants.
Yeah. I wonder that too.
Certainly.
I mean, really, I mean, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
So maybe not, but maybe. Yeah. So before we kind of clue up here, did you maybe want to advertise your, I know you have a new show. I don't know what's happening with the old show, but you have a new show.
I do have a new show, but I'm still kind of working on getting everything organized the way I want to before I start advertising for it. But there is something new coming in the works. If you can find it, there are a few available as we speak, but it's a little on the down low at the moment.
Sure.
My other show, My Second Self and I, is where I talk about true crime, but my co-host is just also the voice in my head. And somehow it works itself into a cohesive 30 to 45 minute story.
And it is very cohesive. I'm always impressed. I continue to be impressed.
Thank you. They are tremendously difficult to put together.
I'm sure.
I work a full-time job and I get 2 hours a night of like active brain power left over from work to really actually commit to something like that. And then finding all the details and piecing them together and then writing it in my voice and then coming up with jokes that are more appropriate and making it entertaining and fun. And sometimes I have to make new music for a specific thing or whatever idea pops into my head. It takes a little while for me because I probably have ADHD and I don't have a diagnosis because I don't have money to go to a therapist or a real doctor. Sure. So I just talk to the voice in my head about stuff and then I record it sometimes. And it usually revolves around true crime, and it works out okay.
Yeah, no, I enjoy listening to the episodes just because they are so, you know, finite. Like, you can tell that there's a lot of effort going on behind the scenes to kind of pull everything together.
Thank you. Because,
you know, I mean, like you said, it's not only, like, figuring out your voice, but also this other voice, and then research about true crime. Which,
and also
as
being
as
able
we've
to
seen,
tell the story.
Right. Well, which, you know, as we've seen in this episode, sometimes there are varying degrees of story available. And you kind of don't have a choice but to, like, go through each one and figure out, you know, what the fuck is happening.
And for the most part, they're all pretty much the same information.
Yeah.
But every now and then you come across a new detail that you have to double check and see, like, did this happen or is this just this person's way of embellishing something?
Right.
And you have to try to fit it back into your timeline and keep things organized. And it just gets, it gets gummy sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. All right, Matt. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure being on. This was a lot of fun to talk about today.
Yeah. You know, I always enjoy having guests on because they have, you know, new, different perspectives.
Perspectives are fun.
And it's nice to have somebody else to bounce ideas off who is not myself.
Well, I would say I feel the same, but we just talked about what I do in my spare time.
Right.
So I'll let y'all figure that one out.
Right. All right, man. Well, thanks for the time again. Take care. And
anytime.
Yeah, have a good night.
You as well. Thank you.
The Identity Podcast is brought to you by host Janine Mercer, and the music was created using GarageBand. Find The Odd Pod on Twitter, Instagram, at Identity Pod, and on Facebook as The Identity Podcast. Got a paranormal experience to share? Send those along to theidentitypodcast@gmail.com. If you liked what you heard, please take a moment to mash that subscribe button and leave me a 5-star review. And don't forget to tell your friends, family, and coworkers about this podcast. Every little bit helps. Boop, there's the creepy lady.
Okay. Oh, that automatic like AI voice is so cringe.
Bitch is creepy.
For real. Hello, we are recording now.
Right. Please put your genitals away. You're in a conference call.
Your own genitals.